And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go. And so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the Hurling Show. Mikey, Paddy, JJ and myself are here after a brilliant weekend of hurling. No interviews today, and I don't want to whinge too much about that because, you know, the big counties don't want to do anything anymore. No, I'm not going to whinge about interviews because I'm a broken record now, but I am going to whinge about something else because there's just not enough whinging in hurling quarters. Offaly, lads. Offaly are in the quarterfinals of the National Hurling League. They're playing Tipperary, who have had a sensational league in Division 1. Offaly, before yesterday evening, were on 0 points. Offaly were having a nightmare league. Offaly looked like they were going to go relegated out of Division 1B and it'd be an absolute disaster. So they just beat Kerry, and then all of a sudden on scoring difference, lo and behold, they've gone from being potentially relegated out of Division 1B into the lower depths of hurling. No disrespect to the teams that are down there. Now suddenly they're playing Tipperary in a league quarterfinal. This is absolute nonsense, JJ.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. Like, you see the games that Dublin and Clare are after putting in, and to see, no respect to Offaly, but what they're after doing, and they only won one game and they're playing the All-Ireland Champions. Like, you know, it's probably a draw, probably a match that they don't want to play either, to be fair to them. Like, you know, they'll be competitive and get it for a half an hour, 40 minutes, but you can see Tipperary pulling away, and you're probably thinking, what benefit will that be to Tipperary as well? Like, if they do pull up a cricket score against them too, you know, and I can see Tipperary kind of going back towards their probably championship team. They're after kind of messing around with the team the last couple of games, and they're going back to their strongest 15 now for this quarter final, let's say, against Offaly too, you know, and they're probably going to lay down the marker against poor Offaly, you know. So it's kind of a game for nothing, really, you know.
Poor Offaly is
this
the only
is what
way.
The best teams do, they perform when they absolutely have to. This is what the top 8 teams do, they perform when the need is most grave.
You won't wind me up about this, it's just wrong. And if you were, Paddy, if you were to try and explain this to somebody who's not GAA, you know, whose background isn't GAA and doesn't know the kind of dysfunctional way we play our games, like, imagine trying to explain to them that a team with a minus 39 goal difference who were on trying to avoid relegation the day before, and a whitewash, no wins out of four, isn't it? It's four games before yesterday, and being getting one or two hammerings against Galway, got destroyed against Galway, and now they're sitting in a quarter final to play the All-Ireland Champions, the best team in the country.
Yeah, well, sure, like, here we go again, kind of, you know, I hate going on about it, but it's another kind of situation, the GAA, where we're trying to please everyone. It's like, you know, it's after turning into a bit of a mongrel, the whole league. So, you know, there's no purity, there's no sense, because originally there was two tiers where a really, really good top side had been relegated, and then they weren't happy. So now there's a couple of teams that are relegated in the second tier, and they're saying, sure, look, you're still getting to play in the league, okay, you're in Division 2, but you're in the quarter final and semi final, but this is what we're left with then, the top team in the country at the minute, and they're playing Offaly, who, you know, they want to build. That, like, building isn't playing Tipperary in the league quarter final, and we presume, you know, you're only presuming we'll get an unbelievably tough match. So it just doesn't make any sense. And as JJ said, a good point, Dublin and Clare looking at it after putting in some really good performances, and they're really up to that level of challenging a tip, like.
Yeah, and that's it. And but, like, I mean, it's hard to know what the solution is. We talked to Shane Dowling. This is what this system breeds. It's Shane Dowling spoke recently, and he's honest about it, and he's saying, look, we're not too concerned about being in Division 2 because, you know, we've got a young team and we're experimenting, and it's easier to play Offaly, Kerry, Galway and Wexford than it is to play in Division 1 and have to hit the ground running. Because Limerick now play in a league quarter final against Cork, they could beat Cork, then they're getting another great game, so they're getting a good game against Wexford, mm-hmm. Galway, and then they're playing a semi-final. Where's the motivation for these Galwayan teams to come up into 1A? There's none. You're getting a quarter final so much easier than you are.
The last two league winners have come from 1B, sure.
They have,
it's all about momentum. But it doesn't, it might have worked for Clare and Waterford, and it might work for Limerick this year, but it doesn't work for Offaly, and you could argue it doesn't work for Tipperary either. Tipperary have had 5 hard games now, and they're building towards a Munster Championship. They don't really need to go out and beat 7 shades of shite out of Offaly in a league quarter final, and Offaly definitely don't need it. Offaly would have been much better off playing Leash or Kerry in a relegation playoff, maybe win a game, get a little bit of confidence before they go to the Munster Championship. So they're voting on it. This, there's supposed to be a decision made on putting two teams back up into having a Division 1 and a Division 2 again. So having eight teams in Division 1, and they'll play each other at seven games, and then I guess they'll play semi-finals and finals. So that's potentially nine games for one team. Makes far more sense. Okay, that means Limerick are stuck down playing against Kildare and Westmeath.
And that division turns into a farce then, because Limerick, it's not, I'm not, no one's saying this is an easy fix, because there's nine teams, you know, so someone's going to lose out.
If there was eight teams, there'd be no issue.
There'd be no issue.
It'd be done a couple of years ago. Yeah. And is that right or wrong? You could argue either way. But look, I think it has to go back to a top
tier. Which is the least worst scenario.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But if it doesn't go back to an eight, lads, there's still a solution here. Like, I mean, instead of this farce that there's six teams and there's four going to quarterfinals, why not have Division 1 exactly as they are? It's not perfect, but the top three in Division 1A go into quarterfinal and the winner of 1B goes in. So this year you'll have Tipperary, Cork and Waterford and Wexford, and have semi-finals and a final. So it's much harder to get into that. So then Kilkenny lose out, you know, so there's a big team actually not getting in there, and there's a lot more riding on the last game. Like, Kilkenny realistically don't deserve to be in a quarterfinal either by their standards. They've lost two games, drawn one, and they're in a quarter. I don't think they deserve to be in a quarter final either.
Wexford don't deserve to have to play them either.
Well, Wexford get them, but that's a different point of view. But is it not just such a simple, easy fix just to tinker with it that way, Paddy?
Well, even I think, even why don't you even go, okay, one top group, but it's two groups of five. So even 10, okay, you could have one team that will find it very, very difficult. But usually, because, you know, there'll be a different mix of teams, that one team that are a bit weaker, I'm sure teams would probably end up playing you know, the people that they want to actually try out and see, because they won't have to play their season players. And that's what a lot of the league is. When I started playing first, I got my go against Laois, you know, which was brilliant, and obviously that day a good few more players did, and I don't think we hammered them or anything like that. But like, that's what a lot of the league is supposed to be, being able to try out your players. But at the minute it's not. But if you maybe change it to two groups of five or something like that, and then make your semi-final and final out of two group first and second.
But have you you've got a team sitting idle then every second week though, don't you?
Possibly. Oh well, you possibly do, but I don't see a big problem, like logistically maybe, or maybe even, I don't know how you're going to do it, but I think that's better than what's going on at the minute anyway.
Yeah, you know? I think
A team, I don't think it's terrible bad if a team is sitting idle every 2 weeks either.
Maybe, you know, not.
I
mean, maybe.
I think, well, even look at club, they could, you know, what would be wrong with them going and playing with their club even that weekend?
Yeah, no, and that's fair enough. But forget about club. Like, I suppose the one weekend you've off is the break in place. So every team, but then I suppose then you only have four games though. You know, like four games in the group stage isn't that many.
You could have one big group.
Yeah, the major problem is there's not enough teams of a high quality.
No. And that's the thing. So I don't, look, it's very difficult. But like, I mean, this is another thing about hurling, lads. There's no uproar about this every year. Like, and that's a criticism I have of hurling pundit. If this was football, you would have opinion pieces every Sunday about what a disgraceful, dysfunctional, you know what I mean, thing this is. Hurling is the positivity you bring to the punditry, lads. It's because, like, it is, but it's probably because you want to talk it up, because it's, you know, it's, well, number one, it's our national game, and number two, it's not played in every county, so you want to promote it a bit more. But like, I mean, when a thing is a joke, you know, it should be called out as a joke.
Well, I think what happens though, and it happens in championship game or championship years as well, when the last year's league final was two brilliant games, and we played against Tipperary, and Paddy's playing a few of them, that we had crackers of games. And when there are good games in the semi-finals and the finals, everything else before that is forgotten about, and that's the problem. And it's happening in the championship as well. Two good semi-finals, a good final, the rest of the championships were completely forgotten about, because we're talking about a bad championship all the way up to the semi-final. We're talking about a not competitive league all the way up to the semi-final. We get two good games, a good game in the league final, then all is forgiven. This is a brilliant league because we had three cracking games, like, you know what I mean. And that's why I think that it's kind of been pushed under the carpet a small bit as well. Like,
Division 1A has been pretty entertaining thus far. It's just that when you actually get to the business end of the knockout stage, you get all these mismatches, which is kind of spoils it, because Division 1A has been, there's been some shock results, but they've been close matches and hard matches, and it's definitely been getting better. But now you get these, you know, at least two mismatches in the quarterfinal, which kind of sours it.
What are the two mismatches here?
Well, okay, we're putting Offaly and Tipperary in there anyway.
That's all. Like the quarterfinals are going to be good games. Like, I mean, you've Cork Limerick, you've Galway Waterford, and you've Kilkenny Wexford, and arguably the best game there is Kilkenny Wexford, because that's how well Wexford are going. Are Kilkenny's power going to be, you know, challenged here by another pretender?
Another question is, do they want to challenge him now, or do they wait for the first round of the championship? You know what I mean? I think this is one game that Wexford didn't want to get at this time, this particular time. They were kind of in the catch 22. If they had something up their sleeve, do they show it now in the league quarter final, or do you hold on to it for the championship? You know what I mean? That it's a kind of a good scenario.
Should let Banty take the hurdles.
We were talking about this on the football show there, so if you're listening, tune into that. Banty McEnany sent out a completely experimental team against Westmeath, because they played them again in the league final and they were beaten 3-24 to 9 points. They were 118 to 4 points down at half time. So I can't see Davey doing that.
The bookies were took the cleaners as well over that, were they?
Yeah, when you think about it, like, I mean, if you were on the Wexford team, like, you'd be very tempted to be telling your mate to lump on that. You have information the bookies don't have, and like that, that was a bear vote even money.
Yeah.
So you could go to town on something like that if you wanted.
Sort of happened to us with the club game against Ballyhale a couple of years ago. We were 4-1 to win against, obviously, Ballyhale were strong favourites, and to choose our Wednesday before, Colin Fenley, Mick Fenley were injured, TJ Reid got injured, Henry Shefflin was starting, and the RT Sunday game, that was his first game, so then four or five of them were missing. So again, the bookies didn't know that, and a few lads are all around the county there lump money on us, but we only got a point at the last minute to win it.
Right.
So we would win the most hated club in Kilkenny. So
they were sweating. But that's another thing. I got this tip off when I was in college in DCU that Dublin were playing someone in the league, and I got information that I think it was Conal Keeney, who had been on the freeze, was injured. So there was going to be their second or maybe Ryan was injured, and their second free taker was taking him, and the odds for him to be top scorer were something astronomical. So like, I actually got this information late, so I didn't get on it, but loads of lads in DCU were hopping off this fella being top scorer, and he was. So like, there's that information that if you're on a squad, you can totally you could manipulate it if you wanted. Very as a manager, easy. Just change your free taker and
make a fortune.
We are not condoning this type of behaviour at all.
And the fun stops.
Gamble sensibly, but this is the kind of lucrative business you could get into if you're anyway kind of crooked. Lads, we'll move on from that, because I want to talk about Gary Maguire and his bloody moment of madness, really. I've never really seen a goalkeeper come out and try to hatchet a man down like that. Like, he pulled straight across him. What was he trying to do, JJ? It makes no sense.
Look, he was kind of rushing out the line. He probably seen the pass coming over to Liam Blanchfield. He rushed out, but
come out and struck, though, didn't he?
He did. Yeah, it was blatant red card. It was probably get a hefty bander as well, like straight with the hurl. It was in the tent in as well. He tried to injure the man. There's no point in saying any different.
Yeah.
Only for Liam seeing him coming now, in fairness to him, he put up the hurl and blocked him. And catch 22 of it is that he got the goal stood, he got sent off. There was no reason
pointless.
For doing
it. No. It was the reaction of Blanchfield said a lot, though. It's not just because you're sitting opposite me. There's not often a Kilkenny man will complain about a dirty stroke. As
surprised.
Soon as he scored the goal, he was over to the ref saying, "What the bloody hell was that? Did you see that?
He was just in shock himself when he seen it. He said, "What's after happening there?"
Paddy, the percentage chance of that being a goal is very high there. You're going to take your goal, but why pull your man, strike your man? It honestly must have been a moment of madness, because you try to analyse why he would have done it, and I can't think up of a reason. It was almost a sure goal.
Yeah, well, he came out and he says to himself, "Right, I'm gonna bury, I'm gonna catch this head and pull him onto the ground, probably." But Blanchfield, in fairness, lovely little take and sidestep. And I'd say the minute he sidestepped, Maguire kind of panicked and just said, "Oh, here, I'm gonna try and stop him." And it's like the sort of thing a few years ago you'd get an old yellow for it, but geez, it was brutal. Like, so, you know, the red was a fairly good call. But I'd say, like, I know, you know, a few years ago, I was smacking Hurley down like that. I don't know, during play would have been a red, but. Thankfully, these days they kind of see sense. But I think he kind of panicked. He thought he'd be able to clobber him maybe before he came in, and then the little turn, and he was about to strike it. So I'd say he just, you know, instinct. Well, I hope that's not his instinct.
Yeah, well, like the gas thing is, it's not like he was even trying to camouflage it in a tackle. Like, I mean, there's a smart way. There's a smart way of hurting a lad, and then there's a stupid way of hurting a lad. He just come out and like just got himself a red.
He tried to hurt him as well, which is the worst thing. The ball wasn't anywhere near. He wasn't anywhere near the ball. He was just trying to hack him down.
He could struggle to get back in the team. Now. now, never mind the guy who came in to replacement. Did you see the save on the line by the defender towards the end of the game? Yeah. If you give him the goalkeeper's jersey, Maguire could be done for. Brilliant save, full length, it was great.
Yeah, and he's actually, he was only in, they had a different goalie in the last game, so maybe he's after losing his place. I can't think who the regular goalkeeper
Dewey,
is.
Isn't it?
Yeah, maybe it is. I want to talk about the Pádraig Walsh incident, lads, before we move on to take a look at the games. God, it was a tough, it was hard to watch, like, getting the ball that hard straight in the face. And I'm just wondering, that's the first time I've ever seen that. You don't see that often, no. JJ, where a fella takes a ball straight in the face. And you're just thinking, like, of that hurley, or that ball, the slitter flying around the place. How come we don't see that more often? We don't want to see it,
no,
let me say. But
it rarely happens. It only happened to me ever once in my career. It was only a couple of years ago, and that was 5 yards away from me, and he dropped, poked the ball and came up and hit me straight in the face. And lucky enough, I had the face guard on as well, because it did take the brunt of it. Now, to be fair, like, you know, it's just you can't react. You just don't see it. You're hit before you actually realise what's going on. But so Pádraig was down low, kind of trying to kind of flick the ball away. But I suppose a lot of kind of goal chances would go from your hip down. They all keep them low, so that's probably the reason why a lot of people don't get hit with it, you know. But no, it's not nice to see. He was on the ground, you know, by him, he's in pain straight away as well, like, you know. And I suppose, look, a bit of sense of half time to take him off, like, you know, because he probably, adrenaline got him through 5-10 minutes, and then after that, then if anyone was sat down, he probably couldn't get going again. But I think he was in hospital last night, and he got the all clear.
Yeah.
Is there a gap in the face guard that I can get through, or there's no way you can get hurt with the face guard on?
See, you probably hit him around the cheekbone. He probably turned sideways.
He got the jaw, I think.
Yeah, and there's a bar there, that kind of a connection to the bar there. So I probably hit that. That's where it hit me that time. It hit me there, and I had a massive black eye in it. But only forward, I'd say, would have brought me jawbone. I'd say very, very easily. I'd say.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Paddy, is there any sort of technique you'd often? I'm sure you would have been in situations like that. Someone's bearing down in goal, and you're in front of them. Like, do you go to the side and try to block it, or what? How do you protect yourself from a ball hitting you like that?
You can't really, as Jay just said, usually people are going below the crossbar, and if you have to go below the crossbar, you can't start the shot. If the shot's a couple of yards away from you, you're not going to be able to start it head high, because it'll just go over the bar. So usually it is low. But usually you just kind of throw yourself out, make yourself big like Schmeichel, and hope it hits off you. But like, he was just unlucky the other day, and for the fair sickener. And even, I'd say even if you had the perfect face guards, you know, I know that they've won their safety measured and all that. I think that the impact would bring the face guard back so far that, you know, it's going to make some contact with your face, especially like, how hard was that slitter being hit? Was that rocket? So,
a rocket.
I don't know if there's much technique. You just throw yourself as big as you can and cover a couple of vital organs and hope for the best.
You're glad he was taken off at half time, though, because I don't know. I'm bringing up football again on the hurling podcast, but I don't know how long was left in the Mayo game when Killian O'Connor got hit, and he was trying to stand up, and he kept staggering, and he was falling over, and you're just thinking, in a week, you know, when, you know, we've had a death after a suspected head injury in soccer, like, you just like to think that concussions are being dealt with seriously. And I'm not saying Pádraig Walsh was definitely concussed, but it's nice to know that he was taken off, because, you know, that was a hell of a shot he took. And same thing with Killian O'Connor. You just, like, scenes like Killian O'Connor stumbling around like that are kind of scary, you know.
Yeah, Killian O'Connor, that was at the very end of the game. I don't, like, I'd say there's no doubt Pádraig Walsh was concussed. Like, Jesus, he was nearly killed, I'd say. Never mind the concussion protocols and stuff like that. Like, I don't think there's, generally, I think concussions aren't an issue in GAA. Like, I mean, that's a rugby, like, kind of rugby problem, and I don't really see that many issues or examples of GAA players getting concussed and playing on while they're wobbling. Like, it just doesn't happen. I remember, actually, it happened to me once before in an under 21 match where I took a belt and I was knocked out for maybe 2 or 3 seconds, and I got back up. But all this talk about playing on, doing, I was all over the place.
So
I
your put, coordination must
I,
go as well,
I put my hand up and asked to go off, because I was running around and I actually wasn't sure what field I was on or anything.
Right,
so I was
like,
I don't understand how these rugby players can say, I'm playing on through this, unless maybe the fog clears and you're okay again.
Okay.
But definitely in my experience, after getting concussed like that, there is no way you're going to be this warrior that's running. Like, and if you are the warrior running around, you're useless to your team because you're completely in cloud cuckoo land. Do you ever get one, Paddy?
Yeah, I actually do. It was funny. I think it was 06, we were playing Kilkenny in the under 21 All Ireland, and I don't know what I was doing. I was trying to flick a ball on the ground, and I think it was Austin Murphy might have run into my jaw, and it didn't mean it or anything, but
ran into my jaw.
It was just off target, but anyway, whatever. He was, in fairness, the ball was there, but that night, like even that day, I couldn't remember a lot during the first half, and then half time I remember getting the physio to put a bit of ice on my head, trying to, you know, get me back normal, and went out, and I was actually fine, felt fine in the second half, but I went home and watched the match that night, and I was in the pub and looking at it, and I couldn't remember most of it. Like, I hit a couple of balls and I said, geez, I can't remember that part, and actually the physio came back on a second time, I called it back on, and I couldn't remember that part either, so
right.
It's kind of, it was scary kind of looking back on it afterwards.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. I think maybe it is a case, you see, with boxers, they're in trouble and then the fog clears after, you know what I mean? You get your senses back, but you're still probably not right to be playing.
No,
so, like, I mean, usually you should be taking off. Right, lads, we'll take a break and we'll be back to have a look at Clare Waterford and Tip Cork.
It's tough. I won't tell, there's no point in papering over like that. It is extremely tough. I won't tell you, but again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else. It's about Waterford.
We waited so long. I know I've seen it. One of your tweets yesterday said 6 years. It's obviously a leash, man, but it's a long 6 years for us there, and we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after Leinster final, I was through the morning. My nephew was out in the lawn and he was baking freeze with his socks pulled up, pretending to be TJ Reid, and he fairly brought me back down to earth that day anyway.
Clare Waterford, lads, a beautiful day down in Ennis. It reminded us of the two league finals we saw between the two of them last year, but only because of the weather and the beautiful day, because it was a much more entertaining game and a much better game to watch, definitely, than the first day last year.
Yeah, it was a great game. I suppose the two of them had to go for it as well. They knew what was at stake for the quarter final, and none of them wanted to be in the relegation final against them, which seemed to turn out to be Dublin in the end. But no, it was a great game, very competitive, two teams that are hurling very, very similar as well, and they kind of play the elements as well. They kind of step back when they're against the wind and they kind of push forward a bit more when they had the wind there as well. But I thought Waterford played very well, and the two Bennetts up front, I think Shane is going to be a serious handful this year now as well. You see him, he's after filling out, and he's very, very direct, well, very strong. When he gets the ball, he goes straight for the goal, and he's quick as well. He's deceptively quick, and I think he's materialising into a very, very good forward and good potent attack now that for the Waterford. Like, probably last year didn't have anyone. Maurice Shannon was brilliant the year before and didn't have anyone to step into his boots last year, but this year now you hope now he'll step up to the mark, and his brother got 3 points there again yesterday, and he hurt very well too in fairness to him.
Yeah, he did. Paddy, are we seeing Clare move completely away from those defensive tactics Davy used, and are we seeing Waterford not as obviously moving away but in a small way kind of getting away? They seem to be only going with the one sweeper now rather than kind of packing their defence too much.
Yeah, I think all teams are kind of coming to a realisation that you can be very competitive, and I think from a team, maybe even Davey would look at it this year at Wexford, if you're coming from a lower ebb like Clare and Waterford have a couple of years ago, it will get you so far, it'll get you very, very competitive. But if you want to take the next step onto winning provincial honours or certainly competing to get into an All Ireland final, you have to have a number of players up the field to do the damage. No good keeping it low, because another team, you know, we say Galway's, Tips, Kilkenny, they'll score enough. And so even with a packed defence, and if you're not able to, then obviously you're not going to win the matches, the tight matches. But I thought both teams are playing similar, where you're trying to drag your forward out a bit, but you're not actually putting an orthodox sweep, too many orthodox sweepers back, because teams are very, very used to playing against that, as we said before. You know, their defenders automatically know what to do if the other team is playing a sweeper now, so it's not as effective as it was.
There's nothing more frustrating, I think, than watching that Waterford team, which is absolutely packed with the skillful hurlers, watching them play and they have nobody within 30 yards of the opposition goal. So they seem to be going away from that, thank God, because that was what was the most infuriating thing about Waterford last year, and why we were so happy to see them change that little bit against Kilkenny in the semi-finals, even if Derek McGrath argues they didn't change. They did. They had more players closer to the Kilkenny goal, and they're doing that now. They've got the Bennetts up there, and Boy Manny's fully fit in that, and it's just their attack looks a lot more potent. Now they just need to figure out what to do with Austin Gleeson.
Yeah, no, and we'll talk about Austin Gleeson in a minute. But Derek McGrath talked after the game about Waterford's character. And, like, I mean, I think Waterford, like, I mean, Paddy, you just mentioned Kilkenny, Tipperary and Galway. I think we can start putting Waterford into that four now, because, like, I mean, you're in Ennis, you're 3 points down there, you know, and the game looks like it's slipping away from you. Only the big teams are able to turn that kind of scoreline around.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think there's, that'll be one that they can call on as the year progresses. You know, that's what some of the bigger teams will do. They'll have the belief to go and do it. Now, I still think they have a little way to go, and I think they're playing a little bit similar to what they were before. But they had some great. I thought they had some very good individual performances yesterday. I thought Brick Walsh probably wouldn't be much said about him, but he drove through clear defence a good few times, and particularly in the second half when they didn't play well in the first half, they stayed in it. But in the second half they really put their will on Clare. Now Clare weren't bad in the second half either, but you know they were kind of firefighting. You know, Patch Collins was trying to get the ball and bring it up the field, and they'd maybe do it with something up there, but they had no constant up there. They couldn't keep the ball in the Waterford backline, and I thought it was very, very strong. But again, I didn't think the first half was particularly fantastic, but they definitely look, definitely any of the three teams, you know, that we mentioned, they'd definitely be well able from be hoping to beat them.
Yeah, what do you think, JJ? Are you ready to take a step up?
Yeah, definitely. Over the last couple of years, you see the progression they're after making. And as we spoke with her last week, their Derek McGrath said he's not, if he doesn't win the league, he wouldn't be heartbroken because he's looking for a championship and looking for an Ireland final. And that's the first time you'd ever hear Derek even talk about Ireland was a couple of weeks ago there as well. Like, you know, so it's great for him. It's great for the mentality of that team that, right, we're after winning the league. We won the under-21s. Come on, let's, the next one is to step up. And they are more than capable of doing it. No point in any different, and they're probably all the likes of the younger lads, all the likes of Brick Welsh now and Kevin Moore and these guys, and they won't be around for the next couple of years. I know the lads have a full career ahead of them, but how good will they be without these guys? And it's up to the younger lads now to drive this on to get them over the line now, because the amount of hurling Brick Welsh this afternoon for Waterford alone is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, no, he's brilliant. Sure, when we did that bit of nostalgia, sure, he was back playing in 2004, so he's been around so long. And you're right, he's brilliant at breaking through a tackle. Like,
yeah,
he always gets out the other side rather than getting bottled up. Tom Devine, Mikey, is a throwback to the old school, proper kind of, you know, big brawling
full forward.
I really like watching him come on. You know, he's going to create havoc. Now, he's not that skillful. Like, the shot the goal he got, he made a balls of the first effort. When that should, like, that's a clear open goal, you know, but he's still really good to watch.
He is, and he's the kind of guy, as you say, when you see him coming on, he kind of lifts the crowd. You mentioned Billy Byrne. Billy Byrne just had to, you had to see Billy Byrne warming up, well, I say warming up in quotation marks, on the sideline, and the Wexford crowd would go mad. Devine's the same, because you know, whether you win or lose, you just like you get his big fat arse in the way and break a couple of hurls, and that's what people want. But you're right, Jesus, the connection on that shot the first time was brutal.
Poor, yeah. But it's just not many other players would have kept bulling on to get the retail. Like, he kind
maybe
of...
Maybe he couldn't have been expecting the first time.
When you're a bit limited like that, I'm sure he's like, this might not go in. I'm following this.
But look, as a defender, if you've seen him coming in, you're here we go now. We're going to wrestle here now. You could be running after a small little nippy corner forward up to that, and you see him coming in now. Remember Seamus Pendergast when he came on for Waterford again in time, and back in a few years ago, and you see him coming on and say, right, here we go, we're going to wrestle now for the next 15 minutes there, and you know what you're going to, he's going to stand in beside you, and he's going to be all over, he's going to try and walk through you when he gets the ball there as well, like, you know. So
different challenges. At least you know you won't have to run again
until he leaves you for dead there as well. That's the problem.
Yeah, his movement is very big. Quick, it's not like he just stands on the edge of the square and wants a big ball. Like, he's all over the field. He's actually the only surprising thing for me, Paddy, is that he came on for Curran, because Patrick Curran and him have a great understanding at under 21 level. And I was always thinking that when Devine comes on, you know, give him 10 minutes with Curran and give Curran maybe, you know, because they have that understanding. It was a strange one that he was coming on for, like, his kind of partner in crime at under 21 level.
Yeah, I suppose Pat Curran hadn't been having a great game, but I think it's more so the way he's being used. He was very far from goal, I thought, a lot of time, and I think he's a class act. Unreal touch and skill and all that, and good score. But I think on that day, look around the other four, the two Bennetts are still there, they were dangerous. Top Park Mahoney was having a good game. You don't bring off Brick when he's having a good game, and then Kevin Moran, as I said, so he had to come on for somebody. And when he came on, I don't think it was any coincidence up until that the two Bennetts were going okay, but they kind of seemed to take life when he came in, because no matter if a big man is real skillful or not, they're going to take maybe one more lead that has to leave a man to stop him. And geez, he was an absolute handful. So Shane Bennett absolutely took off when he came in. So maybe he was kind of maybe doing the Patrick Curran role.
Yeah, maybe he was. Shane Bennett's an interesting one as well, lads, because he's, it's hard to know where his best position is. He's a bit like Austin Gleeson. He firefights. He can play anywhere they want him to play. I always thought number 11 was his best position, but I think on, or yesterday we saw him in midfield at centre forward and in a two-man full forward line as well. So, like, I mean, he is a jack of all trades. You just wonder, is moving these lads around, I know, look, I will talk about Austin in a minute, is it helping them not to really nail, at a young age, to not become an expert in one position? Yeah.
But I suppose at a young age you're happy enough to get a start, you know what I mean? And if you're there three or four years, you can say, right, okay, I'm going to establish myself in one particular place. But when you're on the team, and when I started, I didn't care where I was playing. Once I was playing on the first 15, I didn't care where it was, you know what I mean? Because again, after
do you think your game would have suffered, because you obviously established yourself as a wing back, then went in full back, so you got to learn, if, do you think if you were playing 1 week full back, 1 week wing back, you know, do you think that might have affected you a little bit, or do you think
well, I suppose, look, it came to a point there when I kind of had to have a conversation with him and say, look, if you're going to try me full back for the league and the championship, play me there and see how we go, don't put me out in the wing or full back. But look, that came after 5 or 6 years or 7 years playing, you know what I mean? You could have that conversation with him. If that was the first couple of years, I would have said, yeah, no problem, I go wing back, yeah, no problem, I go full back, you know what I mean? Whatever. And I had to do that for a while. But then when it came to the crunch, I said, right, if I'm going to go there for long term, just let me train there, let me play there, let me get useful to the actual position itself, because it does differ, to be fair, like, you know.
Yeah, so based on that information then, that it's not helping Gleeson and Bennett,
but it's not a different situation in that where you're not comparing like with like, because I think Waterford just have a different game plan, if you wanted to use a soccer analogy, kind of total football, they're all just moving around the field. It's not like you're playing, he's playing midfield this week and next week he'll be full forward. It's like for 10 minutes he'll be full forward, and then for 10 minutes he'll be midfield, and 10 minutes he'll be, it's like that is his position, seems to be to rove. And look, it's head melting for us, but obviously that's the way Derek McGrath's had them playing for years now, and they, you know, whether right or wrong, it seems that seems to be the system he has, is that players, whether it's to confuse the opposition or what, but they do seem to be on rotation.
A lot of forwards, more than they would move, it mightn't be that he's playing bad in that position, but they're trying to get someone else into the game, and then they have to move because of that. So forwards will rotate that bit more than backs. Obviously, will be wing back, corner back, or you can interchange there for 10, maybe 5-10 minutes. But as a forward, you are rotating a lot, to be fair, you know. And again, as what I said previously, it mightn't be your own fault, but you're trying to get one of your star lads into the game, and you're moved because of that. But you're playing better than him, you know, that kind of way. So it's kind of.
I accept your point, Mikey, but I do think there's a big difference between playing on a two-man full forward line and playing in midfield, for example. You know, especially Waterford will leave one or two up. I think Waterford rotate how many people or many players they leave in the forward, so it's always kind of different. But I do accept the all-rounder kind of point. But, like, I mean, with Shane Bennett, I don't know, Paddy, what do you think? Like, I mean, if you're in there in a two-man full forward line, then you're out in midfield and then you're back in again, do you think you can nail down a position, or do you think, take Mikey's point as in Waterford nearly outside of the full back line kind of do that, all of them do that anyway?
Yeah, I think they do. I wouldn't mind seeing him change it a little bit. I think especially a young player, you'd like to see him, who is playing corner forward, that he gets a couple of matches there. If he has a good game there, then he's getting a little bit more belief, because he, you know, Shane Bennett is a little bit inconsistent, and I think a lot of it could be to do with some days he could be out roaming around the middle, next day he's in as a full forward. So first he's expected to get on more handy ball, take, be a link man, you get nice hand passes, you move it on, and then the next day you're getting rested by a full back. So you're really kind of chopping and changing all the time, and as a back, like JJ was saying, at the back you don't want that, and I think sometimes as a forward you don't. Okay, switch between wing forward, centre forward, switch between full forward, wing forward, whatever it is there. They're all similar type positions, but if you're going from a roam and then to a two full, then you're playing the field, I think it's very confusing, and he'll find it very hard to build up that confidence. Whereas I think his brother Stephen is nearly coming on in leaps and bounds a little bit more, even, because he kind of knows he's going to be close to goal a lot of the time.
Yeah.
He knows where to be moving. He's had a couple of good performances there. He knows that he's a little bit of trust in the management. But if you're getting moved all the time, I don't know, is there a little bit of doubt that can set in?
Yeah, because like pretty much last year he was centre half forward, and that was pretty much it. Is it fair to say it's this year he's been doing the midfield and the full forward, or maybe he goes from centre forward and two man full forward when his brother a little bit. So that now midfield has been thrown into the mix.
He started a replay down in Torres there. The two of them were in the full forward line as well, and they were effective enough. You know what I mean? Because makes sense the two, well, where they're playing, the two of them play close to each other because they have a natural instinct there together, and they're hurling since they're 5 or 6 years of age together, you know, so they know where each other's going to be, like, you know, so it's going to be interesting. Look, it's good, a headache for Derek McGrath to have, to be fair. You'd rather have it now than not have that headache. So it's just where they're going to put him.
He's
now,
loads of options, and that's does, good. Yeah, that's yeah. good management now. Whether Morris comes back in, does Devine start, does Stephen Bennett start, then who starts the half forward line, and where Austin Gleeson starts is probably the biggest one, and that's the challenge Derek McGrath has because he's been moving him around. Personally, if I was a manager, I'd prefer to see some of them a bit more settled and know what their job is. But Austin looks like he's confused altogether. Like, I mean, I think if there's one position on the field, I wouldn't play him as centre half back. He's a marked man. He's player of the year. Lads want to get at him. In the forwards, at least he can dictate the pace of the game. Her centre half back, he's bloody marking Podge Collins for a while yesterday, or was it for longer? I couldn't really tell on the TV, but he started in midfield. And, like, I mean, if you were playing Austin Gleeson centre half forward, if I was playing Cork, I'd have put Kingston on him, run him all over the place, because Austin's too much of a hurler to mark you. So now he's coming in with this huge reputation, and he's getting taken to the cleaners by lads. So, like, I mean, I'd say Austin's taken off now, it's reached a point, you know. So I'd say, like, give the man a break and play him up front.
Well, I think Derek Moran knows exactly where he's going to play in Cup Championship, and I think he's going to play him centre forward.
Do you think so?
I think so, yeah. But reason being, he's not playing him there at the moment, is if I was going to mark Austin Gleeson later on in the year in Championship, I'd love to get a rattle at him in the league to see what, how you get on with him and see how he hurls, and then you might be able to figure out come Championship. But then if you don't get a chance to mark him, and then he comes into a Championship game and you have to mark him, he's going to be a handful. He's very, very good in the air. He's very good off the right and left. But I think he will be start centre forward come Championship. So I think Derek McGrath knows, because even heard, I seen a quote from there this morning, you'll see the best of Austin Gleeson in a couple of weeks' time come Championship. Right. So he doesn't want him burning out in the league or anything like that, and that's why he probably took him off. And then again, he could be taken off just to kind of mark his card and say, look, you're hurler of the year last year, all right, but this doesn't guarantee you're going to stay in this starting 15, so it's a good thing for Derek McGrath to be doing as well, like, if it's not hurting his confidence.
Yeah, he might have noticed that they rattled off the 4 winning points after he got off the field yesterday as well.
Don't kick him when he's down now, Mike.
You're saying you might want to give him a message, but there's a message in itself. You wouldn't have to say anything. He's sitting there, he's been taken off in the last 10 minutes in order to score the 4 points to win him the match.
Yeah, I know you were like machines when you were playing, JJ. It's like Kilkenny were, I don't know, like, he just came back next year with the motivation year after year, a combination of Cody and a combination of the culture in Kilkenny and tradition and everything. But the year you came back in 2004 after winning Player of the Year, did you feel any different? Did you feel a little bit the eyes were on you? Like, was there a bit more pressure?
I didn't feel any different, but Brian Cody made it his business now to make sure the head wasn't getting too big.
Really? How?
He was just kind of calling out really on bits and pieces that you were doing, and I thought it was going well, okay, in the league now and all that kind of stuff. But he always made it a point to say, look, you're not hurler of the year now. The year is over. It's a new team, fresh start again. That's it. Like, that's his way of doing it now. I didn't think it was getting carried away, but maybe it was. I noticed myself, I didn't. But he wasn't going to let that happen, and that was his management style. He said, just make sure, like, right, your feet are going to be well and truly planted underneath the ground, not underground, underneath the ground.
JJ was out on the holiday, the team holiday. Do you know who I am? Probably.
JJ turned up for
South Africa or something.
Yeah. Brian who
turned up in a fur coat for training. Yeah.
get a higher Ferrari or something.
Yeah, the gear was it only the Ferrari.
JJ, was it only you who he treated like that, or other hurlers of the year would have got the same treatment?
That was his way. That was management style. Was there was no one bigger in the team, and if you think, even if he thinks you're, like, you mightn't be doing it, but if he thinks you're getting bigger than the panel itself, Kilkenny was always bigger than any one person, and that's the way he managed his team and managed always did. Now, it wasn't just one person, he picked it out, it was just, that was his motto across the board. And you've seen a couple of years before I won hurler of the year, he got rid of a couple of household names there as well. So if he did it before, and he had no problem doing it as well, like, you know what I mean. So you had your warning was well and truly on the table. So look, and then he was just kind of marking my card is what he was doing that particular year.
Yeah, he did it to Charlie Carter, and I'm still haven't forgiven Cody for it since that day. But Paddy, the thing about the difference between Austin and JJ, and like, JJ was a, you know, a brilliant defender, but Austin Gleeson is a kind of a maverick. So, and he's very, very young. So in Austin Gleeson's head, is he coming back this year thinking, you know, I'm player of the year, I have to reproduce this, you know, this kind of breathtaking moments that, you know, he had been doing?
I don't think so. I think he's playing a lot of the style he has before. I think the real thing here is that he's not getting on enough ball. I think at the minute they're playing him as a kind of a deep line midfielder, and I'd say what they want him to do is be coming onto ball because if he's coming onto balls facing the goals, the attacking goals, like, he's obviously very, very hard to stop. But I'd probably question, is he working hard enough to get on the ball? And by that, I mean, most of the top players, when they don't have it, they're trying to get around it, even if that only means getting hurried. Because if you're concentrating on making turnovers for the team and the team as a whole, the more you're getting after the opposition players, the more the ball is likely to drop to you. Like, if you think John McGrath does a good bit with tip, he's always, you know, he's honest to the come. And TJ Reid also has an arm in summer. You know, they're just an example of some of the very good players. But I think the best players work the hardest. And I think at the minute he doesn't look like he's working as hard as some of the other lads in the team. And that's just an observation. So, you know, I'm sure as championship comes, he will. But as JJ said, I wouldn't be shocked to see him up centre forward when the championship comes. And if it was me, I'd nearly put Kevin Moore out the field and give him that midfield role and give him the license up and down the field. And like, Austin needs to be in the ticket the whole time. He's their talisman, and when he's playing well, they're going well, as we saw in the semi last year.
Yeah, and it's difficult to be a talisman when you've got a really difficult man marking job. What about Clare, lads? Because, like, I mean, we've been kind of avoiding making judgments on teams and doing, like, you know, maybe like a Gerard Lochnan, he gets a mention on every show, or something like this on a Monday. But can we, you know, make a decision on Clare now? As in, they needed to win that. They're home. It's a beautiful day. It's championship intensity. Like, I mean, Clare's regression over the last few years has been well documented since they won the All-Ireland. Do we see any progression on this year to see that these are going to get to that top table? I think they're as far away from that top table now as they have been in the last 3 years.
It's kind of a mixed league, but they looked very, very unlucky now not to qualify. Like, you know what I mean? They were probably 5-10 minutes away from qualifying in that particular league. But I think you're actually seeing Clare now in the next couple of games. You'll see their championship team coming. It's going to evolve now as well. My David McNerney back in cornerback, he done a great job on Patrick Corn there as well. Yeah. I think he's an absolute fabulous hurler.
But who are they missing though? Like, I mean, they're not missing, like, Galvin's not back in, is he?
He came on there for the last 10 minutes. Yeah.
Oh, Colm Galvin did come on, is right, yeah. But who else are they missing then?
But I was just saying, for the last
McGrath, and he's out for the year, Paddy, right?
Is he?
I thought I saw
medical advice is he's to take the year, isn't it?
To take the year out or something. So he's a huge loss.
Oh, that was Ryan, was it? No, that was Conor Ryan.
He's out as well for the year, yeah.
Jesus, what's going on down there?
Well, that's the thing. Like, it does look like what they had, the cards they had yesterday, maybe.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, that they're actually getting to their championship team now at the moment with McInerney back and Tony Kelly back there. They're two massive, massive players forward. I can see probably David McNerney go back out centre back. I think he should be out centre back for Clare as well. He's the most consistent defender over the last, himself and Keane Dillon, them down the spine of the team, they were absolutely phenomenal there as well. Like, you know, so him going back and hitting a lot of ball, he's a huge lift for Clare alone. And he was missing last year through injury. You know, he came on for the last game they played alright, but he just wasn't right, you know. And big pre-season under his belt as well, and I think he's going to kick on for the summer as well.
Yeah, so like, I mean, like, my kind of point with Clare is, are they All-Ireland contenders? Like, I can't see them winning All-Ireland.
But you could see him knocking out a big team.
Yeah, maybe on
very, very easy. They could see him knocking out a big team. If they caught someone under day and everyone went right for them, they're quick. The ball that they play into the full forward line is phenomenal. It's just always down the wings. As a full-back, it would be a nightmare because it's just straight down the wings and the Clare forwards are running onto it and turning when they get the ball. And Aaron Shanner will be a handful as well. He's just developed a small bit more, get more cuter, I suppose. And but the ball of Podge Collins is hitting in, and what he done for the first probably 20 minutes, his goal was phenomenal, and his first 20 minutes there yesterday was unmarkable.
It's a great goal.
Brilliant goal.
Paddy, my question here is with Clare, right? How can a team, I don't know if you think they're All-Ireland contenders or not, but a team that's All-Ireland champions 3 years ago and with the age profile they have with a new management team, they should be All-Ireland contenders, but they don't seem to be.
No, not at the minute. As JJ said, if I was, just say I was still with Tip and we were going to play him though, you wouldn't take him lightly. But as they did in 2013, were they contenders that year? No, they weren't. They were far from it. Now, you couldn't say a couple of teams were knocked out. I do think, with the amount of success they've had underage, if they got a run going, I wouldn't be surprised. Now, a couple of players were saying there that aren't playing, they're big losses. Like, they're players that can swing you 3 and 4 points in a match, even yesterday's match. You know, they came close off the Waterford there yesterday. But I did think, I was disappointed that they let it slip so badly in the last 10-15 minutes. As you said, they're at home, they're very, very hard to beat in Cusack Park. It's kind of a knockout game. And I thought they were playing quite well in the first half, should have been a little further ahead. But I was just saying, is there something mentally there that they didn't shove on, that they didn't, you know, take the right decisions, that they didn't win enough of their own puck outs to force the ball up the other end of the field? Like, as far as I could see, yes, they were just being shoved back more and more and more. Now, they had their sporadic attacks, but that wasn't, you know, they weren't consistent to win that second half.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Boys, we need to take a quick look at Cork Tipperary, and we maybe focus on Cork. And what Tipperary made 7 changes to the gate or to the side that threw with Kilkenny, so they're obviously a little bit in experimentation mode. But at the same time, like, I mean, Cork, I think they had 12 wides in the first half. They scored 26 points. Yeah. Like, this is an offensive masterclass from them against the Tipperary team. And I don't care, because we've waxed lyrical. I know they made 7 changes, but Tipperary are a bit like Dublin in the football. They have a squad. Yeah, so, like, let's not say, oh, this is a depleted Tipperary, because you've lads coming in who are bloody good hurlers. It's just, you know, Tipperary have such a big number of them. Like, there's an argument to be made that Cork are the success story of this year.
Yeah, look, I suppose my own opinion that I started the year was that they actually struggled there, but they actually finished second in the league altogether, so I suppose it goes to show what I know about it as well. Like, but,
no, but you had evidence to go on. Like, last year was a bloody disaster
for
them.
Yeah,
like.
But they have a lot of pre-season done. I'd say they earmarked the league, they start the league that right, we'll get a good start, and they got a phenomenal start against Clare. That kind of kicked the whole thing off, and the heavy train they were doing for 2 or 3 months before that justified just in that win alone, because they gave them confidence then to kick on. But after finding a couple of very, very good key forwards there as well, like, you know, and Patrick Horgan came back on yesterday, scored 15 points and 4 from play as well. And again, I give out parts to myself about him, but he was a leader there yesterday again, and I just want him to kick on. We know what we can do, just kick on and go again the next day. Again, that's what you'd want, to have the likes of Patrick Horgan as well, you know.
I never doubted him. It was the rest of you who were questioning Patrick Horgan. I said he'd come good, but you're still looking at the league table there, and our concern, I think, about Cork at the start of the season was defence more than the attack. We always said they'd score, and if you look at they've still conceded 781 in the league. So they're managing to outscore teams, but their defence hasn't quite been shored up, has it?
A bit harsh on them now, because 81 points is less than every other team in the league. Like, I mean, they've actually conceded less points than Tipperary, Waterford, Kilkenny. Now, they've conceded the most goals, which is, you know, a criticism of Cork. Yeah. They experimented with the sweeper. They've conceded 7 goals, Tipperary 4, Waterford 4, Kilkenny 6. So it's not outrageous. Like,
no.
I mean, the improvement, this, I can't understand this, Paddy. This isn't with a new manager or anything. This is with the very same hand that they had last year, which, when it was a disaster. How the hell has he turned this around? Is it like, okay, it's only the end of the group game in the league.
Yeah.
But the signs are really good that the management have turned it around.
Yeah, I think the big thing you have to look at last year was there was a huge transition in last year, in that, even controversial, oh, why are you dropping this lad, you know, Pat Cronin, Shane O'Neill, Paddy O'Sullivan, and it was like a little bit of animosity between Kieran Kingston and even the Cork supporters, and they were sort of doubting him. So I suppose I would have nearly said this year is probably his first proper year, because he had a clean slate to work on. Anyone that was in there knew the story. There was no, he was in control, and you were gone if it wasn't. We even seen with Pat Horgan there, he got a couple of games on the bench, and whether that was 3 or just his attitude or what it was, but he was showing, Kingston was showing he's on top, and he's the man there. And I think you're kind of seeing that now. I complained a couple of weeks ago that they still look disjointed, but that has improved. The last couple of times I've seen him, that has improved. They're working that bit harder for each other, and that makes all the difference. Even though, as I said, people don't see it, that makes a huge difference. Pat Horgan comes into the team, scores 15 points. I can't remember, you know, in the last year has he had a game like that. He's got 4 from play, and he's given trouble. So I would argue that nearly this is his first proper year where he's given the full backing of supporters, full backing of the players and the county board, and now he can go on and get on with the job. But I think, as you said, the goals are still an issue. And for me, their backline is actually has good players, strong, fast, physical, but a little bit of leadership is lacking back there, and a little bit of cuteness to know, okay, there is 6 forwards against 6 backs, but sometimes it's our unit against the other unit, so you have to sometimes sit in, or you have to lead your man to stop a goal chance. And I think at the minute, that if I was looking at it, that would be their biggest problem, that they need a couple of organisers to make sure that the goals are not going in the championship.
Yeah, and maybe something like that. And it's funny you mentioned work rate, and I know like you can't put everything down to work rate, but definitely I thought Cork last year, you know, like it didn't look like they were cleared at all. I remember I did a GAA Jackass down with Dermot O'Sullivan, and I was talking to him about it, and he didn't like some of the attitude of some of the players, and he said that we need to get that back, that work rate. Yeah. And I saw Kingston come out after yesterday's game, and I have to say the work rate, the effort, and the never say die attitude of the team in the second half was excellent. Yeah. And it's just hammering this home with these lads, you know. And we talked on the football podcast, lads, and I'd be interested to hear your opinion on this. Is Eddie Jones came in with the England rugby team, right? And there's this, usually in rugby is a bit like GAA, they kind of have conservative kind of comments after a game, but Eddie Jones tapped into the kind of confidence and arrogance of the England players, media, nation. And I often think that the Cork manager should do that. It's there in them, like they are arrogant and they are Cork, and I'd love to see Kingston, I know it's not his personality, but I'd love to see a Cork manager come in and go, well, I'm not worried about anyone. Yeah. Why would Cork worry about anyone and say we have the players, look at our forward line, like, yeah. I mean, are you crazy? And be bullish about it and say, well, like, I mean, Tipperary are all Ireland champions, but like, I mean, don't think we're gonna, you know. And like, I honestly think Cork players will respond to that better than respond to this, we'll work hard. And I don't think that's the way they speak amongst themselves.
No,
I don't,
that's the thing, it could be completely different behind closed doors, you know what I mean? What he's going out to the media, like, it'd be a very, very brave thing to do now. And I suppose you're looking at Eddie Jones, and he has the players now, and he has the kind of built up, he has the last, what, 17 or 18 games he was run beaten, yeah. You know what I mean? When you're winning 10-12 games in a row.
No, but he started that though.
Did he?
Yeah, the minute he came in, he started with this confidence, arrogance, bullish nature, as in, I won't accept what's happening, that's not England. Yeah. Like, wouldn't you love a Cork manager to come in and go, what happened the last 2 years won't be repeated, not with this team, you know what I mean?
You may go down there, will you, and take them over. <you know? laughs>
So you're pretty much describing Babs Keating. Like, yeah. You're pretty much doing
I'm not suggesting. Okay,
Babs for Cork, you heard it here first.
Paddy, you might want to get rid of Babs. You'd gladly send him down there.
No, he's alright. He's up in Dublin. I'd say he's alright up there.
But what do you think about this, Paddy? Do you think, like, I mean, GAA managers, and we complained in the football show again, Jesus, getting loads of mention of this about Jim Gavin. Like, he's almost like a robot after the games, and it's like it's emotionless. And, like, you see how it works with Eddie Jones. There's a fear in GAA of it's the whole cliche of putting it up on the dressing room wall. And in my whole career, I've never seen anything go up on the dressing room wall. But, like, that's the worry always in GAA. Whereas Eddie Jones doesn't give a shit about that kind of stuff. And you see with Mourinho, the arrogance and the cockiness rubs off on the players, and actually they respond even better to it.
It does, and this is personality thing, though. Maybe it'll work for every test, but hasn't always worked for Mourinho. Great coach, he's a great coach. Hasn't always worked for Eddie Jones. He's gotten the bullet in a couple of situations, so I don't think it works for everyone. Now, look, if that's what works for him, and you judge your players and say, right, there's massive potential in these ads, all they need is me to spark it, then fine. But obviously, Kane Kingston sees something different. And even he himself, like, does he come across as the sort of lad who's very arrogant? I don't think so.
No, I'm not suggesting. It would be wrong if Kingston...
You're going to be yourself, like.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's fair enough. But I was just wondering, in general, Jesus, if Kingston started saying that, you'd be like, what's he after taking or something? It's just not him. But, like, I mean, I'm after getting away from the point I wanted to make about the improvement in Cork and how he's done it. And, like, it's hard to say that Cork aren't contenders after a couple of the results. They're clearly a match for anyone. They've won the Munster League. Pretty sure they beat Limerick in the Munster League. They've now got 6 points in the league, and they've a forward line, a match for anyone. If they can just figure out that they've got this work rate now, that is the buzzword in hurling, has to be, you have to have that pitch. And if they have all those ingredients, there's no reason why they wouldn't be, you know, in with a shout.
Yeah, but unfortunately, thing though, I think they're playing Tipperary in the first round of the championship.
Right,
you know,
okay,
I mean,
they're so not.
It's going to be good. But look, again, they won't fear them come last there yesterday. Now it'll build them up with a huge amount of confidence, and they know what they're going to come up against. Like, you know, obviously it's going to be a different Tipperary team, but it's the same man in Tipperary jersey, so they have to just take it on and focus on their own game really more than that, because they can't get caught up in what Tipperary are going to do. They're going to have to kind of, again, bit of arrogance there and focus on what they're strong at and what they're strong at the moment. Bring in a few of the younger guys and they're working very, very hard. Like Luke Mead is after having a fabulous league so far. Mark Holman, wing back, I think he's a nice little hurler there as well. Like, you know, and they have a settled full back line and settled centre back line there as well. So they seem to say, right, these are six backs, and then we'll just kind of rotate the forwards as best we can there as well. And Bill Cooper had a very, very good league as well, and he's an important man, unsung hero for him. He does a lot of work for him. He always goes on the opponent's kind of strong defender. He's on Paddy Marder yesterday as well, and that's not an easy task to mark him now as well. So again, they have a lot of positives from the league now, that at the start of the league they would have took it. Just finished second, you told Cork lads they were going to finish second at the start of the league, they would have took their hand and all off you, you know.
Yeah, they've been delighted with it. And to be fair, Cork or hurling needs Cork, doesn't
it? Does,
when,
yeah.
Especially when
I'd bring the colour atmosphere, their fans are fabulous as well, like, you know.
Yeah, because Tipperary and Kilkenny are, you know, at full strength. You need the third in that trio really to be up there, really, you know, just to complete the set. And then you have the Galways, the Limericks, the Clares, the Waterfords,
Wexfords.
And the Wexfords, and suddenly you've got an unbelievable championship. Yeah. Then you know you've got
and
so
Offaly.
Many teams. Well, listen, we can't go back and
to
say
the then, aren't you?
Right, listen, we'll leave it there, lads. More Eddie Joneses, I think, is what we're all agreeing with, but not Kingston to become Eddie Jones. Right, up next, performance of the weekend.
After the match with Marty Morrissey and the Marty squad, and you know the big thing for me yesterday with Clare versus Galway was.
Hang on, did you ask permission to do the Marty squad there?
Well, I didn't, but I was only a special guest. Last Thursday, you asked me the same question when I started Bubbles, and I said yesterday on the Marty squad that yes, I would have started Bubbles for that game yesterday. That was the first I heard of Johnny King coming back with the Galway squad. You know, I was asked just in the Marty squad.
Here, Damien, are you getting paid for Marty squad plugs on our show here?
That's three.
Wait, no, I do that completely voluntarily.
He hits it! It's over the bar! Oh! Holy Moses! What a match!
Move away from the messing there, lads, right? We have a serious show to do here, right?
Performance of the weekend. We've got loads of nominations this weekend. So many good individual performances. Mikey, I'm going to go to you first.
Yeah, I'm working off dispatches here because it wasn't one of the matches shown on League Sunday. But eye-catching performance from David Burke in Galway's win over Limerick. He scored 6 points. I think 5 of them came in the second half when he was moved into the full forward line, which is an interesting move for him.
Okay, interesting, because I actually thought when I saw it he scored 6 from midfield.
No, according to reports I read, no, he was switched and he was playing into the wind. He scored 5 points, which is as many as Limerick scored with the wind in the second half. So that's impressive on its own. And you, just looking back, it's a bit simple, but you look back to the All-Ireland semi-final last to Tipperary, and they only Galway's forward scored maybe 2-6 from play, which isn't bad, but it was kind of, when you're up against Tipperary, you kind of showed that Tipperary had a bit more about them in the forward line, and maybe there's a reliance on Joe Canning. So to have David Burke as an option to stick into the full forward line come later stages of the championship is pretty interesting.
It's actually very interesting because, like, I mean, I wouldn't be putting him in the full forward line. I think they have enough forwards, but he obviously is an option now. I think he's too much of an all-action midfielder to be putting into the full forward line.
Yeah, I think he's one of the most consistent midfielder over the last few years, but I remember marking him there a few years ago and in the All-Ireland final, he was in full forward and I was just took aback from it. I wasn't expecting him in there, you know, that kind of way. And he came in for forward and he laid off for goal for one of the lads there as well. But fabulous hurler, and he's well able to look after himself as well.
How does he play full forward then? He's not moving, he's staying there?
He's moving over and back. He doesn't stand, he's not a conventional full forward, like, because that's not his game. His game is get breaks off, even if the corner, when he's out midfield, he's rows down getting breaks, but he does that in the full forward line as well, like, you know what I mean? But it's not your conventional full forward. He wouldn't stand beside you waiting for the ball to come.
Right.
The ball's a dinner in the field, he's moving all the time. So that keeps you on your toes there as well, like, you know what I mean. So he's a fabulous hurler. He's great touch left or right. I think he's one of the best hurlers in Ireland, to be fair to him.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Paddy, who have you gone for?
I went for Conor Martin, Kilkenny. I think Kilkenny have a spot over there in that corner and they're struggling to fill in it. And 1-5 from play, some shoot, like, so he looked really lively, really quick on the feet. So he could have an eye in the championship.
Yeah, how good is this fella, JJ?
Yeah, he's a great hurler. He's been around the panel the last couple of years and he's getting game time the last few games as well, and this was kind of his start now to make an opportunity, and he'll be starting against Wexford the next day. And then I said the corner forward place is there for him now if he wants it. It's up for grabs there for him, but good for Delgenny now. They were saying they were struggling for corner forwards, but we got Liam Blanchley got 1-2 from play, and Conor Martin got 1-5 from play, so it's good to see them stepping up to the mark.
Imagine the pressure, you know, you say he's around the panel for a couple of years, this was his start, you know, the pressure on a guy to perform. This is your audition.
It's always interesting with Kilkenny, as in these lads will come in and they're shooting the lights out, and now they've been around a few years the panel. Like, you always think a lad that comes in and shoots the lights up is this lad that's coming up through the under 21s and he's ready to hit the ground. No, he's been floating around there for a few years. Like, I mean, Jesus Christ.
Apprenticeship there, so you know what I mean? Earn your stripes.
Yeah. You have to actually get mad at a match and train in 3 nights in a row or something before you get that quality start. It's like, I don't know, some sort of initiation. Who did you go for, JJ?
I went for Shane Bennett at Waterford. I think I'm expecting a big year out of this guy. He's in full forward and he got 1-1, and I think he's very, very direct, very strong. I think he's going to be the focal point for the Waterford attack for the year.
Yeah, he is. And is it fair to say Shane is the much better brother and Stephen is the bigger, more limited brother? Is that the way? I don't want to be harsh.
Very
now,
harsh on him, alright. Tell that, alright.
Go harsh.
Some way to describe two very talented hurlers, isn't it?
You can tell him if you want, will you?
I'm just throwing that out there, lads. I'm completely. There's a disclaimer.
Rubbish.
Are they both equally as good, Paddy? Well, Stephen's the bigger, slower man.
I probably prefer Stephen. Not too
really?
Class X, but I definitely like Stephen. I think there's something about him. He always keeps that. He's always near the ball. He's always around it. I think he's quick enough in his feet. I don't know where you're getting the bigger and kind of limited. And he sets his vision. His class always gets a few scores. I think of the two, Shane is like easier on the eye, and he's you know, when he gets going, it's like, geez, you'd mark him down on your program. But I think Stephen is always there. He always under high balls. He's always foraging and laying off and picks the right option a lot. So I'd be a big fan of his.
Yeah, no, look, okay, well, listen, I have to send my apologies, Stephen, and the fact that he's big has me worried here now as well. Podge Collins, lads, obviously should get a mention. Jeez, his goal was unbelievable and he was busy, but he missed a few bad ones then when they needed him towards the end of the game. And it's weird. Like, I can understand sometimes forwards missing him at the start of the game, but when you're scoring 1-3, you're on fire. Usually those ones towards the end will go over, don't they? It's weird to see them drifting wide when you're on fire.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for him, because if you had got the 2 points, they would get more of the line, sure, you would have been a hero down there as well, like, you know what I mean. But I suppose, look, he's getting the chances, he's getting his shots away at goal, but look, 9 times out of 10 you back Podge Collins to score.
I'm going to defend him and say that he was probably physically wrecked at that stage and he actually couldn't swing a hurl well enough to hit an accurate
shot. Maybe, because geez, he covers ground, doesn't he?
Yeah.
My God, he's
somebody who sidestep as well.
He's an incredibly likeable player.
It's pain to see him, watch him.
Unbelievable. I want to give a shout out to Dara Fitzgibbon as well from Cork, who came off the bench after 6 minutes and scored 5 from play. That's not bad shooting. I think this kind of thing of maybe the night before not knowing that you're going to play at all seems to work, because the winner of this week of Performance of the Week is Patrick Horgan, and he didn't think he was playing. He just came in, and the reason he's winning it is because a few different reasons. He scored 15 points. That's 10 frees, 165, so 4 from play. You know, he was been maligned on the show here of the week I wasn't on it, because I would have defended him here. There was
that's
you defended him here, that his body language was wrong. You were really
his ability was never ever in doubt. he got his body language right there, and see what you can do. You know, after proving us right.
Maybe he listens to the show, and that was the kick up the arse he needed,
which he wouldn't have got if you hadn't have taken some time off.
I don't know what you're trying to say there. Listen, we're into man management here as well, you know. Like, we're just trying to cajole him. I'm not sure what I did with Stephen Bennett, what kind of man management that was. That's kind of insulting man management. So he'd be gone.
He's a player of the year now.
He'd be gone off my panel probably. He'd say up yours. But yeah, I'm delighted to say Patrick Horgan is on the line now. I'm joking, he's not on the line because Cork are on a media ban. And I'm not so Patrick Horgan, there is a GAA Hour Performance of the Week, second Cork man actually to get it. Paul Kingston. Yeah, it is Paul Kingston, isn't it? I thought
no,
it wasn't.
Kieran Kingston's Kieran.
No, Shane
Kingston, Jesus.
Paul Kingston, if you've been sent a mug, you're to send it back immediately.
Paul Kingston is Donny Kingston's brother, who played corner forward for Leash on Saturday night. So I'm getting all confused here with my football hat on me. Yeah, so Patrick Horgan gets the mug. Congratulations to him. And we'll leave it there, lads. That's all we have time for this week. Thanks to everybody. Listen, please don't forget to listen to the football show and the Hard Yards podcast that are out today as well. And we'll see you on Thursday. We've got quarter finals to preview next Thursday, so we have a show then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.